This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Libyans found themselves with three competing governments Monday after skirmishes in the capital between forces of former Prime Minister Khalifa Gweil and the UN-supported National Unity government of Fayez Sarraj. A third government under interim Prime Minister Abdullah Thani continues to control most of the east of the country.
That's Edward Yerenian reporting from Cairo. Details coming up.
Also, the Nigerian government says it's ready to negotiate for the release of 83 more schoolgirls kidnapped 2 years ago by Boko Haram. And many businesses in the capital, Bujumbura, are hurting after more than a year of political violence in Burundi.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Libyans found themselves with three competing governments today after skirmishes in the capital between the former Islamist-supported Prime Minister Khalifa Gweil and the unsupported National Unity government of Fayez Sarraj. Both governments are competing for power in the west of Libya. A third government under interim Prime Minister Abdallah Al-Thani continues to control most of the east of the country. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Tensions reached a boiling point in the Libyan capital Monday as rival militia groups waged a low-level turf war in a political battle between the UN-backed National Unity government of Fayez al-Sarraj and the unrecognized Islamist-supported government of Khalifa Gweil. The Unity government continued to hold one of the seats of power at the Rixos Hotel, which the country's former legislative body, the General National Council, also considers to be its headquarters. Militia forces loyal to Gweil, who call themselves the Presidential Guard, seized other government buildings over the weekend.
القسم الشرعي الوحيد في ليبيا هو المؤتمر الوطني العام وبذلك فإننا نقوم بتسليم المقرات الرئيسية.
Libyan TV broadcast a statement by members of the guard saying they support Gweil and the GNC and asserting the unity government is an attempt to place Libya under a new military dictatorship. Gweil, who is supported by the hardline Islamist Mufti of Tripoli, seized control of the old governmental palace called the Guest Palace and several other government ministries, but insisted he did not want to spill any Libyan blood.
لم يتم اقتحام القصور وإنما بإرادة نفسية جاءوا هؤلاء هم الثوار لحرس الرئاسة.
Gweil told Arab media that he had not retaken the government buildings by force but by popular will. He also claimed that he had contacted rival Prime Minister Abdullah Thani in Tobruk in order to form a new government together. Gweil argued the Sarraj unity government was a failure and it is necessary to reassert control in order to keep the country financially stable. Presidential Guard militiamen who seized government buildings in Gweil's name have reportedly not been paid in 6 months. The UN Special Envoy for Libya, Martin Kobler, tweeted Monday he was saddened by civilian casualties in Tripoli and at a government airbase. He went on to call for unity in the country. Libyan political analyst Khalid Sharif told State TV the situation in the country had returned to square one. He says the unity government has not done anything for the country and it has not even visited most towns and cities. He stresses the situation in the capital, Tripoli, is confused, and it is possible rival militias might resort to arms and ignite a new civil war. Libya has been in turmoil since the NATO-backed overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The Nigerian government says it's ready to negotiate with a Boko Haram faction for the release of 83 more girls kidnapped 2 years ago from the Chibok boarding school. Presidential spokesman Garbu Shehu told Reuters news agency that it is the same faction that released 21 Chibok schoolgirls last week. The government brought the 21 girls to Abuja to be reunited with their families over the weekend.
Niger's interior minister says an attack today by gunmen on a high-security prison has been repulsed, with one attacker being killed. Reuters quotes Mohamed Bazoum as saying the attack was an attempt to free Islamist militants being held in the Kutukali prison, about 50 kilometers northwest of the capital, Niamey. The interior minister did not say whether any inmates had escaped. He does say the situation is under control and Niger forces are hunting attackers who are still at large. Some members of Nigeria's Boko Haram militant group are being held at the prison, but it's not clear if that group is responsible for today's attack.
More than a year of political violence in Burundi has taken a toll on many businesses in the capital, Bujumbura. Reporter Moses Javier Amana visited Sibitoki, a neighborhood that's been especially hard hit.
Sibitoki is a five-minute drive from the center of Bujumbura. It's one of the suburbs where protests against President Pierre Nkurunziza took place. Hundreds of residents here relocated to safer zones, while others fled the country due to the violence. The once busy streets of Cibitoki are now patrolled by police. I met a cobbler who didn't want to reveal his name for security reasons. He says only God will help him and his family to survive. He says there is no money, and that most of the people who fled with their money and capital, and that you can even see the streets are almost empty. He says most of the people abandoned the area and fled because of the fear for their lives. He says that he is undergoing difficult times, that even to get something to eat for the family is becoming a problem. He prays to God that things will change. Each year, the 17th of October is regarded as the International Day for the Eradication of Poverty. Natalie Buckley, director of the United Nations Development Programme in Burundi, says in Burundi, the majority of the people live on about $1 per day. She adds the government and all stakeholders to meet the needs of citizens for the sake of the present and the future generations. Akeza Caroline is a Cibitoki resident, a hairdresser, and a mother of three children. She is worried that her business is failing and doesn't know what the future holds for her. She says she used to work with her hands, but now they no longer get customers. She says they can even go for the entire month without getting a single customer. She said they used to earn $100 per day, but now the things have changed. They get $20 for the whole month, which is not enough to pay for the rent, salaries for the workers, and home expenses. She says she's really facing a serious challenge. The Burundi government launched a poverty reduction strategy last year. This involved creating job opportunities for the youth and empowering the agriculture sector to reduce hunger in the country. According to the Global Food Security Index, Burundi ranks at the bottom of the list for intensity of food deprivation and prevalence of undernourishment. Its Human Development Index is also extremely low. Akeza, the hairdresser in Cibitoki, calls the current financial situation appalling. She says that's why they are raising alarm for the things to change. The situation should change so that they can go back to the life they used to have. She thinks the government should change its approach and work towards resolving this financial crisis, most especially reducing poverty in the country could be the best way to overcome this. She says otherwise, they don't know where they are heading. Though some businesses have reopened and started to fully operate in Burundi's capital after last year's political crisis, many small businesses, especially in the Bujumbura neighborhood where protests against the president were held, are still feeling the backlash. The violence began in April of 2015 when President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in the office. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
16 minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. In the DRC, participants in an African Union-mediated dialogue are expected to unveil a controversial deal to hold elections in April 2018. The country's main opposition coalition has boycotted the talks and called for a general strike on Wednesday. William Clowes has the latest from Kinshasa.
More than 6 weeks after it started, the national dialogue between supporters of President Joseph Kabila and a section of the Congolese opposition is set to conclude. An accord finalized during the weekend is to be adopted, and the forum is to be closed on Tuesday. But a larger opposition coalition, known as the Rassemblement, has rejected the dialogue from the outset and is calling for a second, more inclusive forum. They say the opposition delegation at the talks, led by one-time presidential ally Vital Kamerhe, did not truly represent their interests. VOA spoke with Freddy Matangulu, a senior politician from the Rassemblement.
Pour nous, ça, ce sont les propositions de la majorité présidentielle.
Matangulu said that this accord is simply the propositions of the presidential majority, the name given to Kabila's political alliance. He said Kamerhe's delegation is an integral part of the presidential majority and Kamerhe has rediscovered his political family. Now that the presidential majority has finished its reflections, Matangulu claims, the inclusive dialogue should start as quickly as possible, and the Rassemblement is ready to make concrete proposals. But for the dialogue's participants, the agreement is a roadmap to a transitional government and credible elections. According to a statement from Kamerhe's office, the accord will allow Kabila to remain in office until the next presidential election, to be held in April 2018. In the meantime, a government of national unity will be formed, and Kamerhe is a strong favourite to be named Prime Minister. In contrast, the Rassemblement says Kabila should step down on December 19th at the end of his second and, according to the constitution, final term. The president's opponents argue that he has delayed elections to gain extra time in office. The proposed date of April 2018 for the next elections is also controversial. On October 1st, Corne Nanga, the president of the Electoral Commission, said he would need until at least November 2018 to organize the polls, and he repeated the statement 2 weeks later in Washington. Matangulu says the Electoral Commission under Nanga is not serious because it is in connivance with the presidential majority. He accuses Nanga of creating confusion by saying one thing in Washington and another in Kinshasa, and of spreading what he calls a regime of lies. The Rassemblement has called a general strike for October 19th to apply further pressure on Kabila. The strike date is exactly 1 month after a demonstration in Kinshasa during which more than 50 people died, according to the United Nations. On Monday, the European Union, which has been supporting the dialogue, said elections should be organised in the shortest possible time frame during 2017. The statement said that the European Union will use all the means at its disposal, including targeted sanctions against those responsible for serious human rights violations and who try to obstruct a consensual and peaceful solution to the crisis. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
The head of the Zimbabwe Tax Authority says the proposed introduction of bond notes may actually worsen cash shortages in the country. A statement released by William Bongonwe, chairman of the Revenue Authority, says the bond notes would introduce public uncertainty into the economy. Bonyongwe says people want to keep their U.S. dollars because there is a serious confidence issue with the bond notes. Central Bank Chief John Mangudya has told a local newspaper the government is delaying issuing the bond notes until November, when legislative approval is expected.
A popular Somali newspaper remains closed and its editor is in detention for a second day in the capital, Mogadishu. Workers at the Hog Agal Daily newspaper say Somali government forces raided their offices Saturday night, arrested the editor, Abdi Aden Guled, and seized printing equipment. The National Union of Somali Journalists condemned the arrest and called for the release of the editor. Hog Agal is the longest-running newspaper in Mogadishu and was founded in 1991. The arrest, detention, and harassment of journalists is a regular occurrence, and the country is considered one of the world's most dangerous places for journalists.
The International Court of Justice is holding hearings on demands by Equatorial Guinea that France halt a corruption case against the son of its long-term president, who is also vice president of the West African country. From Paris, Lisa Bryant reports for VOA that Teodoro Obiang is accused of using public funds to pay for his lavish lifestyle.
Okay, and we don't have that report right now, so we'll move on to our next report. Women and aid agencies are calling on the government to fight poverty among South Sudanese women living in rural areas. Both South Sudan's Ministry of Gender, Child, and Social Welfare says the ongoing conflict makes it difficult for the government to reach rural women. Tito Justin attended a ceremony marking the International Day of Rural Women and has more for VOA from Juba.
That is Faith Link's school pupils singing What a Man Can Do, A Woman Can Do today in Juba to mark the International Day of Rural Women. It's the first time South Sudanese women and aid agencies are marking the day since the country became independent in 2011. The day is marked every 15th of October. This year's theme is Together Breaking the Cycle of Rural Poverty. Government officials, NGOs, and UN agencies attended the ceremony. The World Food Programme's deputy country representative says the Day of the Rural Women reminds South Sudanese of the contribution women make on a daily basis to society. Haken Fokam says women are the backbone of small-scale agricultural activities across South Sudan.
They're involved in all activities, from planting to weeding, harvesting, processing, as well as selling crops in the markets. But that is not all. They're also the caregivers for their children, and they are responsible for the good health and well-being of their families.
Regina Osa Lula is the Director for Gender, Child and Social Welfare in South Sudan. Osa says more than half of all rural women in South Sudan are poor, a condition that is only exacerbated by the fighting.
That indicator is very, very important to know that our rural women are very poor and they're really suffering. Now, combined with the conflict, rural women are displaced, and all over the world, inside South Sudan, outside in the neighboring country, they are trying to survive and trying to take care of their children.
Veronica Yara Cole, head of Rural Women Committee from former Lake State's Minkaman, says at least women die monthly due to poor health services in the area. Akol says a significant number of women die in cattle camps because they don't have any means of transportation to access the nearest health services. She says South Sudanese women are demanding peace so that aid agencies can provide much-needed health services to all women.
Women are dying because of health, so we still need more support to the women so that the women can build the nation. Now women are dying during fighting, during crisis. Who will give birth to the children? Who will give birth to the nation again? So we just need like kind of peace so that the women will go and talk and talk and to give more awareness to our people, let them stop fighting.
The United Nations is one of the world's major organizations working to empower women in South Sudan. The UN Women's Deputy Country Representative says women must be empowered if the country is going to develop. Lansana Wone is urging organizations operating in the country to specifically focus on improving the lives of rural women.
We should be able to build on that partnership to move the rural women in South Sudan from where they are today to a higher height. Once we make women champions of the rural area, champions of agriculture, champions of food security in the true sense, then we are in position to bring not only food security, not only economic development, not only social development, but also peace in South Sudan, because women are also champions of peace.
The International Rural Women Day was established by the UN General Assembly in 2007 to recognize the critical role and contribution of rural women in enhancing agricultural and rural development, improving food security, and eradicating rural poverty. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
According to a new report by a human rights group, Australia's treatment of asylum seekers amounts to torture under international law. Amnesty International says about 1,200 asylum seekers have been forcibly transferred to what Australia calls an offshore processing center on the Pacific island of Nauru. Amnesty interviewed refugees and whistleblowers from companies contracted to run the asylum centers. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
In strikingly direct terms, Amnesty International accuses Australia of deliberately inflicting suffering on refugees. Audrey Gogran is head of global issues at the organisation.
Essentially, they've chosen to treat women, men and children with unspeakable cruelty on Nauru as a way to implement a policy designed to stop boats arriving in Australia.
The group says many refugees have mental health problems, adding it has documented cases of self-harm and suicide.
It's an open prison and they can't leave. We've documented cases of physical assault, cases of sexual assault, cases of people who are ill but cannot appear to get the right kinds of treatment. Very harrowing cases where you see parents watching their children suffer and they can't do anything about it.
Even refugees who have successfully applied for asylum in Australia are being forced to stay on Nauru. Among them is Ellie, an Iranian human rights activist, who says via Skype she has been given refugee status.
My case got positive result and I'm a refugee now, but I'm still in Nauru. No third country, no Australia, no way. I'm still in the jail.
Australia says its tough policies are vital to halt people smuggling. Speaking last month at the UN General Assembly, Australia's Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull called his country the ultimate immigration nation.
Porous borders drain away public support for multiculturalism, for immigration, for aid to refugees. Most importantly, the only way to stop the scourge of people smuggling is to deprive the people smugglers of their product. And secure borders do just that.
Amnesty describes that position as untenable and is calling on Australia to shut down its offshore processing centres and allow legitimate refugees to enter Australia. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk, we will talk about marriage. When is the right time to get married? What are the ingredients necessary to make marriage a successful, lasting partnership? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing marriage.
Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.